listening to an extra shot episode on the Project Zion podcast, a shorter episode that lets you get your Project Zion fix in between our full-length episodes. It might be shorter time-wise, but hopefully not in content. So regardless of the temperature at which you prefer your caffeine, sit back and enjoy this extra shot.
The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.
Everyone, and welcome to an extra shot episode here on the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Katie Langston, and what I'm about to share here is a sermon that I delivered at my church on April 3rd. The text for that week was the story of Doubting Thomas. And so the name of the sermon is Having the Faith to Doubt, or Doubting Thomas Was Actually Kind of a Badass. I hope you enjoy. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, I always kind of gave Thomas the side eye. You know, there he was, days after the resurrection, and all his friends were telling him that Jesus was alive again, that Jesus had come back from the grave, that death had been defeated. And Thomas was stubborn. He wouldn't believe. He flat out refused. Like, what was wrong with that guy? And, well, okay. I mean, I totally get that this was kind of a first. I guess, Thomas, maybe you didn't have the benefit of 2,000 years of Christian history to make the idea of the resurrection commonplace. Like the Easter meme I saw floating around on Facebook with a painting of Jesus rising from the dead, and a clever revision to the quintessential millennial hashtag, instead of YOLO, you only live once, it was YOLT. And like, maybe if I'm honest, I recognize that there are parts of the whole thing that make me kind of uncomfortable too. I mean, someone rising from the dead? Really? And then all these doctrines, all this orthodoxy that comes out of it, the creeds, the Trinity, baptism, the Holy Bible, it's a lot. It's a lot to have to believe in. I think faith sometimes feels like a double bind. On the one hand, you're scared not to believe. What happens if this is really all there is? If there's no meaning beyond our current frame of existence? If the world really is as cruel as it seems, and there's no real hope of it ever being transformed into a place of love, justice, and peace? On the other hand, you're scared to believe. And it's crazy, right? The idea of someone rising from the dead, people don't rise from the dead. Everyone knows that. It's not logical. It's not rational. You'll seem foolish for saying that kind of stuff out loud. And so doubt settles in, the haze between the two extremes, the uncertainty, the uncomfortable ambiguity of it all. Studies show that if there's one thing human beings try to avoid, it's ambiguity. A study done several years ago at the California Institute of Technology demonstrates this fact. Participants were given a choice to bet money on drawing a red card from a risky deck that was 50% red cards and 50% black cards, or from an ambiguous deck of unknown composition. It could have been 100% red cards for all they knew, but overwhelmingly, people chose to draw from the risky deck, knowing full well how risky it was. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't, I guess. This has all sorts of implications that I think we see lived out in our everyday lives. You know, who hasn't stayed in a bad relationship or a dead-end job because the ambiguity of the unknown is scarier than the pain of the present situation, which we know we can deal with, at least sort of? Or we trick ourselves into thinking we have more of the information than we really do. I have a feeling that the fear of ambiguity is behind the political polarization of American society. Our problems are so complex, our systems so intricate that it's impossible to wrap our minds around them fully. And so it's much easier to oversimplify, invent scapegoats, and blame the others. Those people over there who come from different places, or speak different languages, or have different experiences, or don't recycle. The fear of ambiguity has plagued the church for centuries. It's difficult to stand face to face with someone who expresses a perspective that is opposed to our own and who thereby might threaten the worldview we've oh so carefully constructed. And so instead of being to work through differences in love and mercy, we've burned heretics, condemned each other to hell, declared war on self-made enemies, splintered and fractured communities, and partnered with imperial powers to enforce our point of view. Yes. We are doubt-avoiding creatures. We go to great lengths to rid ourselves of it. And I think that's why St. Thomas gets such a bad rap. I mean, he has one moment of uncertainty, and he's branded Doubting Thomas forever after. When I was growing up, Jesus' words to Thomas, "Blessed are they who have not seen and yet believed," felt like a punch in the gut. Because I was pretty sure I didn't believe, or at least I didn't know if I did or not. And so I assumed that meant that I wasn't going to be blessed. In preparing this sermon, I looked all over the internet for other sermons on Doubting Thomas, and I'm not sure if that was such a great idea because, as it turns out, there is a lot of nonsense on the internet. But I was fascinated to see some of the approaches. There were the warning sermons, "Don't be a Doubting Thomas." There were the denial sermons. Oh, Thomas didn't actually doubt. He just wondered. Then there were the rehabilitation sermons. Yes, Thomas doubted that one time, but then he repented and never doubted again. But I think all of these approaches miss the nuance and humanity and display of God's grace in Thomas's experience. I think when it comes right down to it, we're all a little jealous of Thomas. He gets to just flat out say what's on his mind. "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." When I'm quiet, when I'm honest, I get that. I totally, totally get that. Maybe we're mad at Thomas because somehow he's allowed to say what we're all really thinking. And yet, when I take a deep breath and go back into the text, I see something a little different than I did at first. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." What are we supposed to make of that? Doubt doesn't feel like peace. It feels like darkness. It feels scary. It's a letting go, an acknowledgement of everything that we don't actually know. It's a surrender to the reality that all of this is beyond our control, that we can't force the right outcome. We can't change other people. We can't prevent pain and suffering. We can't even always be sure we're making the right decision. We spend so much of our time managing our uncertainty when the reality is that there is very little we can be sure of. I grew up devout Mormon in Utah and served a mission to Bulgaria. And we had a family who let us come into their home and share our message. They were dear people who had no interest in becoming Mormons, but they fed us delicious food and it was a nice break from knocking on doors. During one of our many lengthy discussions, the father in the family said, "Aznam che nishto ne znam." The only thing I know is that I don't know anything. I remember that really scared me at the time, but looking back, I wonder if he didn't teach me a profound lesson about faith. You see, faith is not to turn from the ambiguity of doubt to the false god of artificial certainty. but rather to reach out from the darkness to see if there is something there to hold on to. For perhaps it is in the darkness and the uncertainty that God appears. Perhaps faith doesn't mean certainty at all, but is an acknowledgement of uncertainty stacked against an improbable hope. I think there's this idea in the church that faith is supposed to be stabilizing, but that is not my experience at all. Faith is deeply destabilizing. Particularly the story of the incarnation, the crucifixion, and the resurrection. This is a God who does not behave like a proper God. A proper God would come into this mess and clean it up. A proper God would make the lines sharp and clear. A proper God would show us just who is in and who is out. And by the way, we're all in and they're all out. But instead, this God enters the world and flips it all on its head. This God weeps. This God hurts. This God dies. And maybe, just maybe, after all that, this God rises again, still wearing the scars of his suffering. I don't blame you for doubting, Thomas. I doubt it. I doubt it too. But peace be with you, the risen Christ says as he comes into a room full of doubters like me, and perhaps full of doubters like you. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe.
Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ. The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ.